darling.
Hello, honey.
Getting your writing done?
I did a little, yeah.
Working on a poem for you.
A love poem?
Yeah, I guess if it's for you, it's a love poem.
We're speaking at a time of incredible turmoil in American politics, and I actually found watching this film almost felt quite shocking, because no one is talking about politics, no one is angry, right. The bus that breaks down never does turn into a fireball.
Right.
What do you make of a film which actually seems very deliberately to evade any of that toxic atmosphere in modern America?
It's coming out now. I mean, we shot it a year and a half ago or whatever, but it was a calm and easy and nice thing to work on, where my main action in the movie is to listen to everybody around you, which is difficult in one way, that you have to trust that the power of thought or watching someone listen is cinematic enough, which I believe in, or I think Jim was also kind of after. It was kind of an anecdote to what he thought of things with heavy action and a lot of conflict and crisis. Is the opposite of that, where it's a relationship where they actually give each other mutual respect and space, and subverting people's expectations in that way.
When you're a child, you learn there are three dimensions: height, width, and depth. Like a shoebox. Then later you hear there's a fourth dimension: time.
Ron Padgett wrote the poems for the movie. I think Jim and I share an allergy of hearing poetry read where there's like a tone of importance or sentiment. Whoever's presenting it lets you know that it's important. For me, it's hard to listen to. It's more your responsibility to convey a thought and leave the feeling for the audience to have. That was, I think, the only thing we kind of talked about that we tried to accomplish in reading the poems in the movie.
There's a photograph, which I'm guessing is a real photograph of your military uniform, because you did train. You were a Marine before injury ended your military career and you became an actor. Is that you in the Army?
Yeah, he added that to part of it after I said I would do the movie, and it was more about subverting people's expectations we were talking about earlier. He's someone who happens to be the military, but he's not defined by it. He is someone who drives a bus, but he's also happens to write poetry, but he's not defined by any one of those things. He likes to bring up these things, which I think are true to life, that aren't necessarily explained. And, in my experience of being in the military, yes, there's drills and discipline and pain are very much part of your day, but they're people, and people who are working within the backdrop of a military. But it doesn't mean that they have any less civilian problems, that everyone has a family. It demystifies the stereotypes, I think, and more associated with those kind of cultures.
Are you conscious of being in an unusual position as an actor who happened to have been in the military? It can sometimes feel that there's this big gulf between the kind of American who serves and the way that sometimes people think of actors and their political attitudes.
Sure. I mean, I'm trying to give it too much self-importance, but, I think in my generation, particular in the United States, with less than 1% of the population serving in the military, the civilian-military gap is broader than it's been before with, an older generation of actors. It was more of a common thing, Harvey Keitel and Gene Hackman and, but Paul Newman, It wasn't so of an anomaly, but I think it has led to maybe stereotypes about each culture. I mean, that's a part of one of the goals of our nonprofit that my wife and I run, is to share contemporary American theater with a military audience, because at one point we were told by people in the military, higher ups in a room somewhere, that theater didn't fit a military demographic, which I think is, untrue. There's, negative stereotypes about each culture that obviously the only way to overcome those stereotypes is exposure.
Thank you.
Is this the game? You chase me like in the Beatles for 6 months, and then I finally get comfortable and you shrug?
I'm scared, okay? I'm really scared all the time.
When you made Girls, I remember watching it and being struck by the incredible frankness of it, including kind of the sexual explicitness, but also the whole idea of the character of Adam, who's been described as a kind of millennial Don Draper. How do you feel about that character now? And the idea that he might be this really important symbol of masculinity that people will look back at?
No, that's nothing to do with me. Like, I have no responsibility there.
What do you mean? Straight men talk about how you represent them. Women talk about how realistic realistic. That's your performance, isn't it?
Well, I think it's also a testament to the writing. Lena wrote a script and characters that are three-dimensional, not just in the men, but in the women. And I think that's probably what people were responding to. You know, half of the experience is what people bring to, what an audience brings to, you know, theater or film. I have no control once I'm done shooting it on the day. It's beyond me.
You're famous for not having a mobile phone, and there's a great mystery, I think, when you meet young people who don't connect with social media that way. And in this film, you play a character who's, there's a lot of mystery about him. I wondered how far that's a statement. And it affects the way you act, that you keep some mystery about you.
Well, I have a phone. I just don't have social media. Yeah. I think that part of your job as an actor is to be a spy and, you know, go out in life and have experience and fail and make mistakes. And when suddenly you're the person that people are observing, you become more self-aware and self-conscious and kind of check out with what's happening around you and get kind of tunnel vision. That kind of impulse to share everything about my personal life, for a lot of people it's their thing, but for me, for some reason, that just doesn't, it's not my thing.
Has it made it harder than being part of the whole Star Wars universe now? You must attract a level of fandom that does mean people want to know everything about you.
It's different, but you know, people still recognize you on the street, but they're smaller, you know, and you're part of their youth in a way that's really fun. The kids part of it, it's great. You know, when people follow you around in your hotel room looking for you, that's you know, more complicated, I'd say. But you know, at the end of the day, it's all good.
You had to learn to drive a big bus for this. One inevitably wonders if it's actually harder than learning to wield a lightsaber.
Bus is definitely more complicated because it's a heavy piece of machinery.
Take off that mask. You don't need it.
What do you think you'll see if I do?
The face of my son.
Harrison Ford famously said Han Solo should have been killed off years ago. How did you feel knowing you were the one who was going to do it?
Yeah. I think it initially filled me with a lot of anxiety as a Star Wars fan myself. To be given that task, I took a couple months to think about it. Not solely because of you had to kill Han Solo, but that was a large part of it. But on the day, you're not thinking about what it means or what you're doing. You know, you're trying to play the scene and, you know, be in the moment and all that stuff. But I really haven't had time to process it.
I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I have the strength to do it. Will you help me?
Yes, anything.